Hello, everybody. Yeah, I feel like it's Groundhog Day. I had to do this one more time. Anyhow, my name is Gary Fowler. I'm the CEO, president, and founder of GSD Getcha, Dunn Venture Studios, a premier AI and quantum venture studio located in the heart of Silicon Valley. I'm a 17-time serial entrepreneur with several unicorns under the belt. I was on the original management team at Click Software, which was sold to Salesforce for $1.35 billion, and also Eva.ai, your virtual assistant, which was one of the first generative AI companies. I formed that in 2016. It was acquired by Vizier. David Yang was my partner in that company. We believe at GST that intellectual capacity is evenly spread around the world, but opportunities are not. We also believe there's a lot of breakthroughs that can happen on this planet, from medical to infobesity, challenges that we all face to be able to solve some of the problems. And with that, I have an incredible guest today. Monica Kunrads is the CEO and founder of the Rett Syndrome Research Trust. We're going to talk about that again. But she also has an incredible background from everything from the University of Connecticut, where she got her MBA in finance, to the American School of the Hague, which we talked about a little bit earlier. I want to dive into that. That's quite interesting. So with that, I'd like to bring Monica on board. Hi, Monica.
Thank you, Gary. Great to see you. And thank you for inviting me.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about it. You know, we were speaking about it earlier, but so when you went to the American School of the Hague, you said you were there a couple of times. So did they speak English when you were there? Did you have your courses in English or were they in Dutch?
They were in English. We were living there because my dad worked for an American company that had an office in The Hague in the Netherlands. And the school was, you know, there's American schools in lots of European cities and cities around the world that cater to expats that live there, not just Americans, but English and other nationalities. But the classes are taught in English.
So, you know, you've gone down through and you know, you got your MBA in international finance. What made you decide to start the Rett Syndrome Research Trust?
Well, for the same reason that I think any parent that starts a disease advocacy group, certainly not what I planned for, but I had a daughter that was our first child that was diagnosed with Rett syndrome when she was two. I had never heard of it before and started doing some research. And, you know, it was like first you get a gut punch when your child is diagnosed with a pretty horrific disorder. And then there's a second gut punch when you realize that there's nobody doing anything about it or very few people. And at the time we didn't even know the cause, the genetic, you know, cause for Rett that was discovered a year later. And so I decided that it would, you know, that there was a need to raise funds and to really draw attention to the disorder and to, you know, start to make progress.
So, you know, I remember when I was in undergraduate, I did the research on PKU, which is a metabolic disorder where there's an inability to metabolize phenylalanine to tyrosine. And so they would be normal at birth. And over time they would become,
sick.
Deficient, mentally yeah. deficient. And it was interesting for me that, you know, when you talk about this, I mean, Rett syndrome kids are born normal. I mean, they're actually normal, but what happens? What's it look like, Monica? What did you experience?
Yeah, so typically kids with that are later diagnosed with Rett syndrome are born normal. You have a normal pregnancy, normal birth, everything's fine. First year looks pretty normal. And then you start to notice that they're not keeping up with their peers. I was in a mom's group of kids that had all been born the same month, same year. And so I had a lot of kids that I could compare my daughter to. She just wasn't keeping up developmentally. You know, her motor skills, she wasn't crawling, she couldn't get herself into a seated position, she wasn't trying to pull up to standing, she was losing skills. So she had a pincer grasp, she could pick up like Cheerios, and then all of a sudden that went away. Her sippy cup, she couldn't hold it anymore, she couldn't use her hands basically. And then there were other, you know, she started crossing her eyes, she was doing this rocking motion all the time. Just lots of signs. And so
And what is that about? Because I know when I had, I was a clinical psychologist. I remember kids doing that, autistic kids. Why would they, where was that coming from? Why is it rocking motion?
Well, probably some kind of self stimulating? We don't really know. There's so much still about Rett syndrome that we don't know. The hallmark symptom of Rett syndrome is they lose purposeful use of their hands, and it's replaced by a stereotypic involuntary movement, like clapping your hands or kind of role-pilling or some motion that they do with their hands almost incessantly. And we don't know why. So there's a lot of symptoms that we don't understand still.
And so, you know, you've gone down through it, and you know, when I spoke to my doctor, Dr. Lipari, he was telling me, whose daughter also has Rett syndrome, you know, he was telling me that this can be cured. How far are we away from a cure?
Well, we that's a hard question to answer, right? And we don't know, but I can tell you that there's been, you know, tremendous progress in the last 25 years since my daughter was diagnosed. We know the genetic cause of the disease. There are animal models now that have been generated that you can, you know, use for testing. In 2007, there was a big breakthrough. An investigator who's been key in our field, Adrian Bird at the University of Edinburgh, basically did an experiment where the gene that's deficient in Rett syndrome, you can mimic that in a mouse. So you can create a mouse that doesn't have this gene and therefore doesn't have the corresponding protein, but then you can put it back at will. And when you get the levels of this protein back to normal, all of the symptoms in a mouse model went away. And so that suggested that this disease is not beyond repair. Mm-hmm. And it's a very exciting moment. So that's when the Rett Syndrome Research Trust started, and our focus is really on genetic medicines. So we are advancing programs that target the root cause of the disease in a variety of different ways, traditional gene therapy, but also editing where we're trying to correct the mutation. There are two gene therapy trials that have started. This is work that was incubated at the Rett Syndrome Research Trust and then transitioned to companies. And we're just starting to get some preliminary results on these gene therapy trials. In fact, one of the companies is going to be announcing on Monday their results from the first 5 patients. So I think that's going to start to give us some clues. Okay.
What does it look like? Can you have any secrets for us?
No. I actually don't. You know, these are publicly traded companies, so they're not allowed to say anything. Of course, you know, fingers and toes are crossed. And I think, look, I'm expecting and hopeful that there will be improvements, but I also know that developing drugs and genetic medicines also is an iterative process. And the first gene therapy out of the gate is unlikely to be the best or the last. It'll be the first. And I think there may be improvements after that. But it's exciting because this is the first time we've had an opportunity to actually address the underlying root cause of the disease.
And what about, you know, intellectually? Does it impact them intellectually or not?
So historically, if you read scientific papers on Rett syndrome, they all talk about, you know, cognitively, you know, severely cognitively impaired. Mm-hmm. Parents have never quite bought that, you know, because we think our children understand so much more than they can let on, but they're really trapped in their bodies. I mean, when you think about it, they can't speak, they cannot use their hands, so they can't type, they can't do sign language. They've never been able to, you know, hold a book or read on their own or ask a question. So of course that's going to impact their cognitive abilities, but there hasn't really been a way to test their cognitive abilities. And as technology has improved and the younger children now have access, for example, to computers that they can operate with their eyes, right? Instead of a traditional mouse, they're able to operate with their eyes. And, you know, there are kids that are reading and writing actually at school age levels, you know, so I think they understand a lot, and I think they can learn. And I think it's going to be really exciting to see what something like gene therapy might be able to do.
No, that's, you know, it's amazing. And, you know, I remember when I was a psychologist, it's a lot of work taking care of somebody that's got Rett syndrome, I'm sure, right? How do you do it, Monica? How do you like take care of somebody like that? Because it's a, you know, it's a lot of work.
To I'll use my daughter as an example. So she's 28. Her name is Chelsea. She doesn't walk. She doesn't talk. She cannot use her hands. She's fed through a feeding tube. She has seizures, sleeping with sleep problems, gastrointestinal issues, orthopedic scoliosis. I mean, the list goes on and on. And it's, she is unable to do anything on her own. She has no control over her body. She cannot roll over in bed. She cannot pull up the covers if she's cold. She can't kick them off if she's hot. You know, that's the extent of the disability. And I'll just say that when I describe her, people get this mental image, like, you know, this long, long laundry list of symptoms. What you're not picking up from my description is how affectionate and loving and just amazing personality. And it is a full-time job, night and day, 7 days a week. No weekends, it is very intense. I have help. I haven't always had help, but I do have help now. I've worked full time since she was diagnosed. So the way I get it done is I work 7 days a week.
Wow. You know? That's amazing. And you know, you're a great mom to go down through and do that. And, you know, there's so many breakthroughs that are out there. I remember telling Brian, I just did stem cells over in Thailand, systemic stem cells, and it had some challenges. And it's miracle kind of things. These miracles are out there, and it's just a matter of money, you know, whether it's $20 million or $40 million or $100 million. You know, so folks listening to this, there's great opportunity out there to be able to help, to be able to donate, to be able to help with time, to be able to solve these challenges that are in front of us. And with all of us binding together, we can do that. So what do you see? I mean, a lot of it, Monica, is about having people understand the disease, right? And how do you go out? How do you educate people, let them know it even exists?
Well, there's so many diseases out there, right? There's 30,000 genes, and each one of them can be mutated and cause a disease. So it's the awareness is a challenge. But I think what I'd like to share today is kind of our business model at RSRT is to really de-risk programs. So Rett syndrome, there's so many diseases out there. Rett syndrome is never going to be low-hanging fruit for a company, a biopharmaceutical company, to take on themselves. And so our role really is to initiate and incubate these genetic medicine programs, generate the data, de-risk them sufficiently so that we can convince a biopharma company to take them on. Because it would be very difficult for a small nonprofit to go all the way to clinical trials ourselves and commercializing a drug. Like, that's unlikely to happen. So our goal really is to what I call feed the pipeline, feed this pipeline of genetic medicine programs, and then transition them to companies. And I think that's very doable. And awareness is important, but it's not the focus of our organization. I'm sure you know of lots of different rare diseases, but we need to go beyond just awareness, right? And so the money that we raise is mostly raised by Rett families, you know, families that have a child and that, donate themselves, but more importantly, go out to their networks and try to raise money. So we're raising about $8 million a year. It's not enough. But with those funds, we've been able to incubate a number of programs, transition some of them to companies. And now we're trying to do the same with these other genetic medicine modalities.
Well, how long do you think it is before there's a cure?
I mean, you're asking me the question that every Rett family wants to know, including myself. I think it's difficult to answer that question. And I don't really want to give an answer because then, I'm very careful about if there are any Rett families listening, I'm very careful about providing timelines because I don't want to give information that it would be a guess. But I'll say this: next week we're going to get some information about the first five patients, and I think that will start to give us some clues about timeline. You know, how dramatic are the results, and are they seeing the same kind of results in all five patients? You know, we'll see what the company shares with us. you know, genetic medicines have two components, the cargo that you're trying to deliver, for example, the gene therapy, right? You're delivering a gene, but also the delivery modality, right? How are you getting those genes into brain cells? And for, you know, getting genetic medicines or any medicines into the brain is not easy because mm-hmm. there's a blood-brain barrier that's there to keep things out and to keep your brain healthy. It's not easy. And the gold standard for delivery to the brain of genetic medicines is actually using a viral vector, right? A virus that's rendered harmless and is used as a Trojan horse to package your genetic medicine. So we're using the gold standard, which is something called AAV9. And I think we'll, you know, next week we'll start to get some clues about how well that viral vector works for Rett syndrome. There's lots of companies and lots of academic labs trying to find something that works better than AAV9. And so I think in the future, we're going to have more options. But right now we are limited by the delivery technology.
Mm-hmm. No, that's interesting. And are you excited about next week?
I am.
Yeah?
I am. I'm excited. And until we have something in hand that really helps every person with Rett, we're not going to stop, right? But it's exciting. And when I wear my mother hat, right, of course, it's taken us 25 years to get here and it feels really slow, like things can't possibly move fast enough. But when I wear my, you know, CEO hat, we and so many others, right, that have contributed have really made a lot of progress in the last 25 years. We went from a disease that nobody knew about. Now, the mainstream America still doesn't really know about Rett syndrome, but I can guarantee you that biopharma does. Every conversation I have with companies, I never have to explain what Rett syndrome is. They know what it is. They've kept up with the literature. And there's quite a lot of interest. So it's been very exciting to see that.
And so, you know, you look at it, the advances in medicine, you're right on the cutting edge. I'm sure you see those things because you're there. How much different is it now than it was 10 years ago?
Oh, it's unrecognizable. We are advancing six different genetic medicine approaches. So traditional gene therapy, but then also editing, where we're actually trying to correct the mutation, not add extra genes to compensate for the mutated one, but actually correct the mutation in a gene, in RNA, and other.
How do you do that, Monica? Can you do that after the fact? Like when somebody's 10 years old or 20 years old, what happens?
You can do,
theoretically,
you can do
what
it.
Would happen if you
yeah,
do
you can do it. We don't yet know, and we don't yet know with gene therapy either. Will a person with Rett who's 30 or 20 or 10 or 5 or 3 or newborn, how will they respond to the genetic medicine? I mean, I think common sense tells you that the earlier you can intervene, the better. Mm-hmm. Like eventually we could deliver in utero. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that little fetus and baby soon to be born will never get the symptoms to begin with, right? Because our mm-hmm. symptoms start to show up around one and a half, two mm-hmm. years old. So earlier, I think, will always be better. But this is a disease where in animal models, you get a dramatic reversal of every symptom that you can measure in a mouse model. So we think this is a disease where we can actually intervene later too. I don't think my daughter at 28 is going to be cured, like it never even happened. But I think dramatic improvements of symptoms are possible.
No, that's great. And, you know, so, you know, the one thing is there's always hope, right? So there's hope that there's, you're not that far away from it. And now how do you get to that point? I know with some of the advances that we see, that I see with the companies coming to us worldwide, we now have over 160 companies in GSD, and I have some interesting med tech companies, but you're seeing profound things happen. A lot of it's because of generative AI, because you can run things way faster. And then you take generative AI on top of quantum computers, which is 100 million times faster than the fastest computer today, which would take 10,000 years, takes 200 seconds, by the way. And so when you're doing those kind of things, the kind of advancements we're going to see, I know I just had stem cells done in Thailand, 44 million of them. And within 3 hours, pain I had in my back that I had for 30 years went away, completely. Wow. Went away. And I had I saw miracles happen. You know, one guy with cerebral palsy that couldn't walk and end up getting out of a car and standing up and walking up the steps. I've never seen anything like that. It was like, if I would have seen it in a church, I would have thought it was a miracle from God himself. And maybe that was, right? But it, these kind of things are out there and they're going to start impacting us everywhere. And, you know, part of it is also getting the knowledge, right? How do you share the knowledge about these breakthrough therapies to be able to help so people don't have to reinvent the wheel all the time?
Yeah.
But it's great to have somebody like you that's out there, and your dedication is amazing. You know, I'm sure it's it takes a lot. You know, there are vacations you want to take and you can't take them, and those kind of things. But, you know, being a mom and loving your daughter that much is just, you know, that's, you got to applaud you. That's amazing, right?
To go. Well, thank you. It's been therapeutic for me too. Like, I think just not, you know, not just sitting back and accepting the status quo, but just being involved. And, you know, even on her worst days where we've been, you know, in the ICU or just really bad, dark, bad days, to have something positive to do. And, you know, and you mentioned hope. It's so powerful, right? And in the beginning, it was hope just based on the fact that, you know, I couldn't accept the alternative of this is the status quo and the best we're going to get. But now it's hope that's really.
You're close to a breakthrough. These technologies are out there for the breakthrough, and, you know, getting out there and raising the money to be able to support it. You're right. You know, I like the idea of qualifying it before you give it to them, so they know there's an opportunity and they don't have to start from scratch. That's really good. But for them, it's just taking it to the next level and using their apparatus that they have in place to be able to make it go to market. And so when I hear about these gene editing stuff, because on the stem cell side, on the breakthrough side, I hear about people talking about it, like in places like Latin America, where they're starting to do those kind of things to help us. So it's going to be interesting, you know, to once they start to become mainstream. I mean, stem cells also, you know, wouldn't be for Brian, right, and being my doctor and going into the office, and he sold me on it, and then I went over and did it myself. I wouldn't have believed that things would happen like they did, you know?
Yeah. With editing, it's actually, there are these, there's multiple kinds of editing, but in some cases, like something called base editing, prime editing, these are not phenomenons that actually naturally occur in cells. They've been engineered. And there are these editors that basically correct, it's almost like a word processor. You know, they can correct mutations that are made in your genetic sequence, and you can just, you know, get rid of the mistake and put in what should have been there to begin with. And some of these are already in clinical trials here in the US, and there's a number of editing companies, quite a few of them. And when RSRT started, Rett Syndrome Research Trust, when we started, the only genetic modality we had available to us was gene therapy. Mm-hmm. And now all these other approaches that we're pursuing, they hadn't been engineered yet. They hadn't been discovered yet. That's pretty mind-blowing. We're not talking about that many years ago, you know? And so we really are in the midst of a genetic medicine revolution. And there will be new approaches that are going to be discovered. And as they are, you know, our role will be to try to get programs moving in those new technologies as well. This is really a situation of multiple shots on goal. We need a lot of shots on goal to see, you know, which one's going to work. And yeah, so
those parents that are out there that, you know, that have just found out that their child has Rett syndrome, what would you say to them right now? How do they get a hold of you? And
you know, hopefully they find our website, reverseret.org. And we've got a section on there for newly diagnosed families, kind of this is what you do first, and then this is what you do second. And one of them is to call me, contact me. I can't tell you how many families who call me in their most, you know, in their darkest moment, right? Their lives have just been shattered. And once they hear about the science and what's going on and how many people are actually working on Rett for disease that they hadn't heard of until, you know, that day or that week, it really helps, right? Because, you know, you're not alone. I think I can connect them with other families, whether in their city or state or somebody that has the same mutation their daughter has or the child has, or the same, you know, same age, something like that. It helps. It helps to know you're not doing this alone. It helps to know that I have a 28-year-old and she's still here. I'm still here. We're doing okay. You know, I think it helps to have that.
That's great. You said two things, right? You know, hope and knowing you're not alone. So that's the good thing, the warm and fuzzy. That's great. So we're coming up to the top of the show. Closing thoughts and how do people get a hold of you?
So, yeah, if anyone wants to learn more about Rett syndrome or, you know, is looking for a way to help in a transformative way, I'd love to talk to you. And you could email me, monica@rsrt.org. Look at our website, reverseret.org, Rett Syndrome Research Trust. I'm pretty easy to find. Would love to talk to anyone who has experiences, ideas, suggestions, feedback.
So we've had a couple of, we have a question here. Hi, yes. Monica. So next week we will know the results of the five young kids, correct?
Yes. So it's the first five patients, right? So the clinical trial is larger than that. It's 16 patients, but this is the first five patients that the company will report results on.
Excellent. All right. Super. Well, Monica, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule. It was an enjoyable conversation. And thanks to all of you for joining one more time. GSD presents Silicon Valley AI and Tech. My name is Gary Fowler, and I'm your host. Stay happy, stay safe, and stay healthy. And I'll be back to you again soon with another exciting edition. Thanks, Monica. And thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Gary. Thanks to your listeners.